I'm only getting fucking warmed up.
All right.
Okay, folks, welcome to another edition of the Nomide Podcast. I'm Mitch Maxine. If you've got any comments or questions, send them to my personal Facebook page, the Nomide Podcast Facebook page, or drop me an email at nomidepodcast2021.
It's Christmas.
Or if you've got any comments or questions, you can email them to me at nomidepodcast2021@gmail.com. Jesus, they left the gate open tonight. Holy crap. Okay, let's go around the table, say hi to everybody. The sanest to the least sane. Bob, how's it going?
Oh, sanest. Thank you very much.
You started with the sanest?
I'm starting with the one who's being the least pain in the ass. How about that? Oh. Bob, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. It's been a long time since we had one of these.
Two or three weeks, I think, yeah.
I was listening to the most recent episode, and I got to apologize. I tend to get boisterous, and I talk over people, and when I want to make a point or something, and I'm gonna vow not to, or at least try not to do that this time around. So anyway, go ahead.
No, really, none of us noticed. Okay, since Lenny jumped in, Len, how you doing, brother?
And good to see Rick back. It's been a while, Rick. Good to have you.
Yeah.
And I so much to talk about tonight. I hope we don't just run crazy over time. You have to make three podcasts out of this, but good to hear all, guys.
Rick, how you doing, man? Good to have you back on.
Good. Yeah, I missed a couple of there. I was otherwise involved. It's good to be back. Good to talk to everybody. Hope Darren's was having a good time in Spain.
All right, brother. How you doing, Darren?
Good. As well as like, I really enjoyed the one in Spain. Anyway, despite being away on holidays, it was my first day there, and it was a good way to start things off. I'm happy to be back, and I'm happy to be back on the podcast. On a kind of serious note, I was just thinking before you do the introduction of the topics. I remember when you were talking about the topic and saying that we had talked about it before and we had come to a general consensus. And then as we got talking about it again, my whole opinion had changed just since the last time we talked about it. And so I'm so interested in tonight's topic because it's already changed a couple times over a few podcasts. So yeah, I have no idea where it's going to go tonight or who's going to change my mind or what the outcome is going to be.
It's funny because Lenny made us privy to a little bit of an issue he had at the dojo this week. And I was thinking about that issue in terms of that topic as we have spoken about it on the podcast in the past. So before we get into the actual topic, Len, I know you had an issue at your dojo. If you want to spend a minute and bring us up to speed on it, maybe we can have a little chit-chat about that before we get into the actual topics.
Unless it's politically awkward for you to talk.
No, God, no. It's just, how do you even preclude it? I don't know if it's someone's attitude, if it's the sign of the times, or just one person being belligerent. Okay, we're all involved in karate. We all have a grading structure. We've all come up under a grading structure. We've trashed out the subject of whether it should be just white belt and black belt and the Q belt system. But this raised its head with a parent this week when they approached me. They said, they'd rather their child didn't do any grades because it was far too unnecessary pressure on them. And it's certainly not, didn't want to be involved in a system of belts which they're made feel inferior to others. And that was how they kicked off the conversation.
Our last episode was the woke culture, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ironically, I actually wondered had she listened to the episode. This was just some kind of setup. broke that day.
The funny part is it not only connects to the woke culture because of that sense of entitlement, but a few podcasts back, we talked about the notion of having a beltless ranking system where you're either white belt or you're black belt. And I'm interested in talking about this whole happening in the context of both of those, the entitlement as well as the ranking system. So, I don't know. Len, do you have anything you want to say about it before we get going around the table?
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of jumped back and forth over a number of podcasts on this to being an advocate of 100% of Cuba belts. I remember one night way back after Bob having his say, saying, okay, I'm converted. And then I went back again, and I've been struggling greatly with it until this week. And I thought, hang on a second, this is reality check. We do need this. And we kind of chatted privately about it, that whatever about a Q-belt system, it was indicative of challenges we have to meet in life. And you're going to meet exams, and you're going to meet tests. In any, you're going to meet in school, you're going to meet, as we all spoke privately during the week, about driving tests and so on. So sitting a grade for a Q-belt is it's part and parcel of your martial arts life, as sitting an exam in school is in your educational life. So it gave me a reality check going, hang on a second. This isn't a bad notion to have Q-belts.
Okay, Len, let me throw a different perspective on that, because I was thinking about this ever since you sent those messages a couple of days back. You're right. Through everybody's normal advancement through life, you are met with tests, whether it's in school, whether it's for driving, whether it's for a job, blah, blah, blah. What about the notion that maybe a parent who has watched their kid suffer under the pressure of that ever-present notion of being tested just wants to get their kid involved in something where that pressure doesn't exist? Where, you know what? The kid seems to like this notion of the martial arts. Maybe that's a place I can take them and let them just do what they like to do without that added pressure of ranks and tests that they face almost constantly in every other avenue of their life. Is there any validity to that notion?
Can I jump in for a sec?
No.
The one thing that really strikes me about this is that the reason why ranks were brought in the first place was to make the whole trip more appealing to children. It gives them a sense of accomplishment to get to a new grade. So it's really ironic that the whole thing's been turned around backwards like this.
It's exactly, and I tried to mirror that point to the parent in question. I said, look, achieving a grade is a great honor, because you start on each step on the path, hopefully someday to show that. But if you achieve a grade, it's then your job to look after people coming behind you. So it's a great honor to achieve that, as opposed to a challenge.
Sorry, Len, you can't argue that along with that honor. And I found it really interesting that you put that perspective out, because in the decades I've been involved in the martial arts and have been involved in grading tests in the martial arts, that notion has never been spoken to me. Like, you should feel honored to be of this rank, because now you are given the opportunity to impact the people coming up behind you. That's a really interesting point.
I was the same. When I heard that, I never would have thought of explaining it to people that way, but that makes perfect sense. I'd actually like to go back and hear what we did on the podcast, because I think I was probably a proponent of the no belt ranking system. So I'd like to hear what I said on that podcast, because now I'm totally for the whole ranking system.
We weren't told that it was an honor, but we were sort of said it's a responsibility. Once you get a higher rank, part of the higher rank is a responsibility to shepherd and look after the lower belts coming up behind you.
In saying that, if I remember, it was forced upon us, and it wasn't in a negative way, but you still felt pressure. If you put it the way Lenny said, it's more of an entertainment and a privilege, and this is great, I can show somebody else some stuff. Whereas when we were going through it, it was a pressure to get the next belt, because people were looking up to you.
The thing is,
and that just put more undue stress on you.
Listening to what Lenny was saying, Len, you're absolutely right. In terms of it being an honor, and in terms of it being just, you know, part of the structure, but you can't deny that, and I certainly come in on Darren's side, I have never gone through a grading, and I've been through a number of them in my martial arts career in various martial arts, where I didn't feel an immense amount of pressure. That pressure, I think, no matter how you frame it to the parents and the students and the kids, that process comes inherent with it an incredible amount of pressure.
But the basic thing we're discussing is the idea that pressure situations are necessary to mature.
Yeah.
Okay, and believe me, I agree with that, and I'm just playing devil's advocate. But don't people face enough of those pressure situations without them having to face them in their pastimes as well?
There's two ways to look at it. I think Lenny and I were talking about this the other day as well. When someone is taking karate or whatever martial art they're doing, never mind whether it's just a pastime, if they're taking a martial art in general, we'll stick with karate, because that was the situation that he found himself in. But if you're doing karate, if you're doing it as a pastime for sheer enjoyment, then you don't want it to be any more than that. But one of the proponents of karate that they're teaching you is discipline and confidence and being able to prepare you for other aspects of your life. So they tend to make the karate classes really hard so that other parts of your life might go a bit smoother or at least coincide with it. Whereas if you're taking karate as an outlet to get away from your everyday life, the whole thing contradicts itself, depending on your reasons for taking the art to begin with. So it is really hard to differentiate the two.
What Darren says strikes a point with me. Some of us have done some judo for a number of years, and there are actually two types of training in judo. There's competitive and there's recreational. Recreational is for enjoyment. Competitive is for the rank and for the so on. So
yeah, but Bob,
maybe
when
there's an analog in karate.
Okay, but Bob, hang on a sec. You and I both took judo to relative ranks. Did you feel
recreationally?
Right. Did you feel any less pressure because we trained recreationally during those gradings?
That's not really a fair question, because I'm a highly anxious person and feel pressure during like right now. I gotta talk and make sense and form sentences. I feel anxious all the time, so it's not really, you know.
No, just you can't discount your opinion just because you say I feel anxious all the time, so my opinion doesn't matter.
No, I know what he means. Even if you're collecting stamps, but you're taking that really seriously, you're going to feel the pressure of just something like that.
Exactly. So it doesn't matter whether it's recreational or whether it's competitive. When a grading comes up, there's a certain amount of pressure inherent in the performance or in the enactment of a grading. It's just part and parcel. So,
two questions about this, Lenny. Did the child, did he complain, or was it the parent?
The parent complained, because I actually discussed that point with him, that the child in question was so excited to be doing their grade and was really looking forward to it.
The parent is trying to put the bubble around the kid to try and keep everything away. That's
very much so.
Yeah. That's no play, yeah. That puts a whole different tack on it. If a person a green belt comes up and says, I really don't want to take any more gradings because they're just too much pressure on me. I just want to be a green belt. I mean, even Mitch has said he would have been happy to be a brown belt for the rest of his life.
We're talking about a 7-year-old here, by the way.
Yeah. So it's the parent that's pushing this. So that's the entitlement. That's the snowplow parent.
Snowplow?
That's a new one.
Yeah, they want to clear all obstacles away from their children's rising.
I like that. Never heard that before.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, Len, so look, we can bandy about the pros and cons and good and bad of whether, you know, grading should happen. They're part of the structure. We all accept that. So let's just move on from that. What was the resolution to that?
Do you want the watered down version or the uncensored version?
Oh, whatever you want.
Whichever one makes you angrier,
and whichever one you don't mind being put in public on the podcast.
I'm clenching stress balls at my feet here. I was very kind of diplomatic and kind of explanatory, you know, at the start, and went through the whole thing of, as we said, you know, first of all, your son's very excited about it, and it's a great honor to achieve it because you can help the people coming behind, and you know, when you work your way up the ladder, yada 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 yada. Yeah. And they were still uncompromised, and then I started throwing out the scenarios about what's the story when you hit an exam in school. Do you say you don't want to do it because it's too much pressure, or when you do your driving test? And it was bandied backwards and forward, and eventually I just said, look, with all due respect, there's 25 kids inside waiting to start a class. My assistant instructor has already started a class, your child included. They're preparing for a grade in 2 weeks' time. I got to go teach a class. You have to go and think about this. This is the grade structure. This is the way the class is run. I'm not willing to bend on this. It's been like this historically. It always will be. You have to have a think about it. If it's not for you, it's not for you. I hate to lose your child, but you need to go away and think about things. And I haven't heard since.
As far as you know, is the kid still a member of the dojo?
Well, if they don't show up next week, probably not. But yeah, I haven't heard anything to the contrary.
That's what I was getting at.
No, I haven't heard.
Wonder what the conversation is over that child's dinner with their parent about that.
Yeah, what if the kids don't eat them vegetables? So you're going to have conflict over that?
You know, it's funny. I hearken back to what Darren said just a couple of minutes ago back about the podcast about rank and whether it should just be white belt to black belt. And I remember myself advocating pretty strongly for that. And then when this whole thing with Lenny came up, my first thought was, that's insane. Having the ranks provides a lot of really good lessons and a lot of really, really, really strong examples and prepares you a lot for what you're going to be facing.
As I recall, the consensus on that episode was that rank is good for children. And for adults who can who are mature enough to distinguish, you don't necessarily need the rank.
Okay, here's a question for you. If these ranking or these various belt ranks and the pressure that you go through when you move from rank to rank is so character building and so good for kids, why do MMA classes not, because MMA classes have kids in them too, or they have kids classes, why do those kids suffer from a lack of pressure from moving from rank to rank? Are those classes inferior because they don't have a graduated ranking system?
Do they not have ranks?
They lose fights.
Bob, to answer your question, and I'm leveraging off what I've heard Darren say in the past, but yeah, MMA classes, MMA training clubs don't have rank, even with kids. Is that right, Darren?
Yeah, they don't.
Yeah. So do those kids suffer from a lack of pressure from moving through a graduated ranking system? Are we saying that MMA is inferior because it doesn't have that graduated ranking system?
Something tells me that MMA is kind of apart from boxing, and MMA are sort of distinct in that.
Yeah, I was going to use soccer as an analogy, but boxing works the same way. If you're training to be a soccer player, there's no grades, there's no belt systems. You're either good at soccer or you're not.
Yeah.
And you either make the good team or you don't. And it's the same in boxing, and that's kind of how MMA works. I just think it's not necessarily apples and oranges, but I think you have a ranking system in some things and you don't in others, and I think they're just equally efficient in what it is they do, depending on what they're trying to achieve or what the outcome. I don't think by playing soccer you're building confidence and discipline and all that stuff. Maybe you are to a certain degree, but probably not to the same degree that you would in a karate club.
Okay,
to whether one's good or bad, I don't know.
Darren's comment leads directly into the talking points, so let's jump into them. The actual talking points for tonight are martial arts myths, and I realize that that's an unfair title. It should be martial arts stereotypes. Are these stereotypes valid or are they not? So we're going to go through, I've got about half a dozen here, and let's go through them one at a time, and we'll just go around the table and see what you think of these individual comments. So the first one, karate takes
threw
a lifetime.
A little bit.
I did, and then I swallowed it again. Karate takes a lifetime to master. Anyone want to go through first?
Absolutely.
Oh, it does all not. Right. Come on. Fuck. Sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Hey.
Sorry.
Then you are saying that you've been in it for years. I've been in it for years. You are a master of karate now?
I am saying it hasn't taken me 35 years to figure out how to do a fucking low block.
Oh, that's being a master, dude. That's not being a master. Now, there's a difference.
Who defines
exactly
the master?
Who defines the master? I mean,
10th degree black belt.
By the way, Lenny, if you mention George Dillman in this podcast, I swear to God.
See us next week, guys.
You can learn karate in a couple of years, but then you are always working. I mean, year one yourself, Mitch, you're always saying, "Well, I need to improve myself by doing this, or I want to improve this on myself." So you're not finished. You're not finished your product, but you're the one in charge of that.
There comes a point in your training, as you age, where you're never going to be better than you are at that moment.
Right.
Where that
age actually has. Oh, I'm sorry. I did it again.
Go ahead, Bob. Go ahead. No,
again.
It's fine.
Aging actually lowers. You get worse as you age. I'm sorry to have to put it that way, but that's the way it is. It's a law of diminishing returns, and there is a point at which you are as good as you will ever be, and then it's downhill from there.
and so leveraging
off strictly karate and not saying, okay, I took karate for 48 years. Now I'm going to change to sword drawing. I'm going to change.
Well,
to
we're
that.
Wait a minute. Why are we switching martial arts?
Because we're talking about that old.
The statement we're talking about is karate takes a lifetime to master. That's what we're debating. I think the point I'm
karate
the
or
point
martial arts?
Karate. Now the point I'm making, and I think the point Bob is making, and Bob, please correct me if I'm wrong, is as you age, you're going to reach a point where no matter how much you practice or try or study or whatever, you're just not going to get any better. And you're going to have to forgive me, but the amount of time that I've been training, which is it's 30 odd years. Rick's closer to 70, but the amount of time that I've been training. I don't want to hang a moniker of ability on myself, but I think I've got a decent handle on most of what's in our syllabus. So I'm trying to wrap my head around this notion of karate takes a lifetime to master. You know what my honest opinion of that statement is? That's a statement made by people who aren't very good at it and put out that statement to give them some validation in terms of the fact that someday they might be. I think that's
almost like a challenge. Karate, you're going to take karate your entire life and you're still going to learn. You're still learning a few things every now and then. Like
maybe
you said,
it's
you've been around the block seven times, but you'll still learn something new every now and then.
I thought it was more of a philosophical statement in the sense where they say when you reach a black belt, that's when you start to actually learn. It's obviously not true because probably if you started late, your black belt is going to be the pinnacle and you're going to be at that age thing where you start to deteriorate. So you're not actually getting better. But philosophically, it does take a lifetime to achieve or to master because they kind of just want you to keep training.
But the statement, I think,
could be read different ways. It's like something in the Bible. You can interpret it however you want.
I'm put to mind of those videos that we discussed in an earlier episode of the old geezers who are still trying to do kata, and they're obviously broken down, and everybody around them is saying it takes a lifetime. They're on a higher plane mentally, I suppose.
No.
But it's some way of trying to justify. Hey, you go, geezer.
I can't help thinking that. Mike Chapman said it when he said somebody asked him how long did it take to learn how to fight, and he says, "Well, look, I can teach you how to fight in about 2 or 3 months." He says, "Or I can teach you karate, and it'll take most of your life." Because karate, not necessarily how to do a block, but I mean the whole martial arts learning and internal stuff that you do, it takes a while, and you're always learning, lifetime learning.
Okay, Rick, what was the last thing you learned in karate?
The last thing I learned in karate that I didn't remember my kata.
No, that's the last thing you forgot in karate.
Oh, okay, that's the last thing I forgot. That's right.
My point, I know your point, Mitch. I have gone up to a lot of clubs and then left the clubs, not just karate, but other arts. And then my girlfriend would be like, oh, how come you're not going back there? And I said, they have nothing to teach me. I haven't perfected what it is they're teaching, but they have nothing to teach me. So maybe I haven't mastered it physically, but I ain't learning anything there. So therefore, I want to go somewhere else where I'm going to learn something new. So the term mastering it, does that mean learning it or being able to perfect it physically?
All right,
or?
Let me put this out there. There's a school of thought that's, from my perspective and what I've seen on the internet, is generally accepted that says it takes about 10,000 hours to master something. Why is karate, like when you are an electrician or you're a pipe fitter or you're a baseball player, a football player, when you're a participant in a billion other endeavors, nobody has a problem saying after 10,000 hours, I think I've got this. Why does karate continue to put itself above all those other endeavors and go, oh, no, it takes a lifetime?
That's an interesting.
It's that pseudo philosophical Zen
exactly
bullshit.
That.
It's that exactly that. that pseudo-philosophical Zen bullshit. That's my point.
There we go.
I got to agree with that.
Len, what do you think? You haven't said much.
I think personally, the basics of karate you'll master in a couple of years. After that, it's what syllabus you're learning, and there's a big difference. It's content as opposed to technique. So I don't think it takes a lifetime to master. It may take a lifetime to learn different styles or learn different techniques.
Fair enough. There's always something else. You can always learn a new cut.
You can always learn something new. But I mean, a kick is a kick, a block is a block, a punch is a punch, movement is movement. You get so far with them and you'll peak, and then you might come down the far side, as we said earlier. So yeah, I think it is achievable in less than a lifetime. I think it's too philosophical a statement to quantify.
Yeah, it's easy to grant there's no such thing as perfection. Okay, fair enough. So you spend your lifetime trying to perfect it, and you never will, and blah, blah, blah. But I'm 62. I can't do what I did when I was 22. And I got to face that fact. And me telling myself that, oh, it takes a lifetime, and I'm still learning, and therefore I'm more of a master than I was at 20. I don't buy it.
You know what's interesting too is like to revert back to the start of this whole podcast where Lenny had the issue where the mother was trying to protect the kid from a bit of stress from doing the grading in some club somewhere, which is so small in the grand scheme of the world, and the kid the kid's having a good time. And then you put yourself into an adult position in a situation that Bob just described, and that's a lot of stress on an adult to be trying to perfect something that you physically cannot. And this is your life, and this is what you're doing, and you know you will never perfect it. That's stressful. That's frustrating. That's suicidal now. It's like, I've just spent my life trying to do this, and it's getting worse and worse as life goes on.
That's why I hate this statement. It makes the study of karate self-defeating, because you'll never be good at it. You'll never perfect it. You'll never become a quote-unquote master of it.
Fuck that
so,
statement.
But you're not the one. If you say you're the master, no, you'll never. If other people will look at you and go, man, he knows what he's talking about. That guy is a master. I won't say that about me, but I might say it about someone else.
Doesn't matter if someone else says it.
You brought up baseball. We'll take a baseball swinger. At his peak, he still takes batting practice every day to try to improve his swing. That's all he does is swing a bat.
Till he gets to be about 40, and then he starts getting worse.
Practicing. No, he's done.
No, he's actually done at that stage.
He's not professional anymore. No,
exactly.
But that's the point. The very statement that karate takes a lifetime to master, inherent in that statement is the notion that you'll eventually master it, and you won't, because you'll hit an age around, I don't know what, 40 to 50, wherever, you start to get worse. And it
whatever age I am right now.
Exactly.
Actually, whatever age I was 10 years ago was when that fucking went down.
I don't know. I just find that statement to be one of those.
Yeah, I'm calling philosophical bullshit there.
Philosophical.
Yeah.
About the 10,000 hours. Yeah. You're talking to someone who's like 21 years old, and you're saying, all right, it's going to take you about 10,000 hours to practice these kicks and punches before you're really good at it. You look at that and you go, okay, I practice 4 hours a week, 6 hours a week, 52 weeks a year. Holy shit.
I'm talking to Lenny and Darren right now. Is this not exact? Oh, and Mitch. Maybe Rick. I don't know.
So all of us. Great.
Plays an instrument. Isn't this exactly like talking about playing an instrument? It takes a lifetime to master. You'll never master it totally. And you'll start to lose your ability as you get older. Isn't it exactly the same?
Yes, no. But nobody...
You won't lose your ability in a musical instrument as you get older.
Yes, you will. Of course you will.
100% will.
Okay, no, sorry. It depends what instrument you're playing.
No, it doesn't.
A fucking triangle player.
Oh, fuck off. Okay. A goddamn triangle.
You put it out there.
Okay, when I'm...
A recorder player.
I'm going to break up my Jew's harp.
Okay, so when I'm 80 and I have my stroke and I can't lift my arm anymore, I can't play the triangle as well as I used to.
You take a, well.
Back when I was 40, I could play that triangle. Oh.
There's other things you can hit it with.
Look.
Lenny, put that back.
Oh, he can hold it in his mouth.
Oh, my God. That's what she said?
Here, hold this in your mouth. I'm going to play it with a part of my body.
Look, let's go around the table one more time on this Karate Takes a Lifetime to Master. Just your last thoughts. I'm going to go first. I think that statement is one of those nonsensical philosophical statements that karate people love to put out there to make them feel more important than they are. Yeah. I hate that statement. I hate those kinds of statements. I hate anything that elevates karate and especially its practitioners above the unwashed masses. I think it's nonsense and I think it does more harm than good.
The unwashed masses.
It's kind of a...
Slow down. Who's next?
Rick, go ahead.
I agree with that right up until you said to boost their... What do you say? Boost their own ego. It is a statement. It's a philosophical statement, but it is not made by someone to boost themselves up.
Exactly...
It's a philosophical statement to try and encourage people to continue.
That's
what I figure.
Okay, fair enough.
And nothing else.
That's a...
Bob.
Bob's doing that jump over people thing again.
Oh, that's right. God damn it. Note to self.
Go ahead, Bob.
It's a pseudo modesty thing. It's something people say.
It's faux modesty.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, are you done?
I'm done.
Okay, I'm done. Darren.
I agree with Rick. I can see how it can be misinterpreted many different ways, and as I said, I even yelled it out earlier, that's philosophical bullshit, but I think it's just a way to keep people interested and learning, because once you do, say, master it, at whatever age, let's say you started when you were 5, and you're now 20 or 25, so you've had a good number of years in there, you've kind of mastered all the techniques and everything, you're winning first place everywhere, but so what's the draw now? Why do you keep doing it? Well, because there's going to be other little aspects, and maybe you try out different styles and stuff. So it's kind of a way to keep you motivated, keep you interested, and keep up the lifetime. And then later on, maybe when your body isn't doing the same thing, maybe you start teaching, maybe you start learning different things, and you start passing on those things. So I think it's a way to keep you interested and keep you motivated instead of just going, okay, once you get your master's degree, get the fuck out and you're done. So I still call philosophical bullshit, probably maybe by the person who wrote it or by a lot of clubs that preach that. But I think there is a semblance in it, as Rick said, where it is just it's just a way to keep you going and keep you learning.
Lenny, what do you think about this?
It's everything you said, Mitch, and it's also, for me, it's also a get-out clause for someone who's not particularly good at it and they're a teacher and they go, well, I haven't mastered it. Yeah, it's a real Seagal statement. For me in places. I don't run with it at all.
Okay.
Jesus, fucking tumbleweed.
No, I was expecting more. You were all juiced
no,
up.
I'm banned from mentioning somebody else, so we have to move on.
This whole conversation reminds me of why I enjoy training despite the fact that I'm old and with the caveat that I don't train anymore. But putting myself in that position, doing the best I can with what I have is metaphorically an attempt to master the art. I can still practice kata, and I can still contemplate those things while I'm doing it that I love to contemplate. And that constitutes a form of self-mastery, the better I can do that. So, in a sense, the word mastery has a place in this whole conversation. But Lord, as the body deteriorates, you can't claim mastery above other people. You can claim self-mastery. How's that?
That's a good point, because if you say, "Yeah, I've mastered everything," and then someone that's only been doing it for a year kicks your ass, well, who's the master now? the guy that beat you or the guy that's been doing it for 20 years and allegedly, quote unquote, mastered it. So even that term, master something, well, that's again, it's subjective.
Okay, moving on. The second statement, karate builds character. And it's funny because I was on the internet looking at various sites as I do tonight before we got together for the podcast. And I saw on a website or a Facebook page called Karate Viewpoints, which, by the way, I've never seen a Facebook page more fuller of shit than that one. But
I gotta check that one out.
That was just
what's the splinters coming off the fence there?
It's called Karate Viewpoints, and they put up these memes. And one of the memes on the site said, "Don't practice to be a better fighter. Practice to be a better person." And that leads directly into this statement. So let's go around the table. Initial thoughts and conversation as it flows. Karate builds character.
Jeez, I tend to agree with the little statement you just said there. Can you just repeat the initial statement?
Don't train to be a better fighter. Train to be a better person.
I kind of like it, to be honest with you. And I think it's a good thing to teach kids and stuff because you are building character. I know it's a martial art. I get all that. But I don't think you should just grab a kid and say, I'll teach you to fuck people up. Like, I think there should be a lot more to it than that. So that's my initial thought based on the statement you just read. Is I kind of like the statement. That's my stance at this point in time. I'm ready to be coerced and chastised or whatever. But my initial thought is I like it.
Okay, Bob, go ahead.
You can't build character without challenge, which is exactly from two talking points ago. You got to go through the testing procedure. You can't build character if you don't put these children through some sort of pressure situation, at least a little bit. Of course, karate builds character. I mean, anything challenging builds character. It doesn't have to be physically challenging. Again, back to the music metaphor, that builds character. Again, we're back to the we're special because we do karate, and we're special because we're warriors, and we build. That's more bullshit. And somebody else go.
I gotta deny that, Bob, because it doesn't say karate is the only thing that will build character. It says karate builds character, which, as you said and Darren said, it does help. I mean, like you said too, any sort of testing, I mean, you get your driver's license, you go and you study for a year, you get your driver's license, you pass, it's like, you feel really good. I mean,
just to echo what Rick was saying, because I was going to jump in there and say the same thing, I think of a lot of it just depends on what you are doing. So if you're not involved in the martial arts, but you're heavily involved in football or soccer or some other thing where you're part of a team, you're part of a camaraderie, there's a challenge, you're competing and all that sort of stuff is going to build character. It just happens we're talking about the martial arts. So I don't think you can say that karate doesn't build character. Just the whole aspect that you're involved in something that is challenging, regardless of what it is, it, by its very nature, it's going to build some sort of character if it's done correctly.
Yeah, Len, Rick, your point is well taken that karate isn't the only thing that builds character. But what I'm saying is many people cling to this notion that they're special because they're in karate, and it builds character more than other things do. I think a lot of people think that of themselves. That's all.
If they do, then they're a little bit egotistical, because anything you, like Darren was saying, anything you get into that helps you and you have to work at, and then you get to a certain level and you go, yes, we did this, a team, a high school football team, they win CASA. It's like all those guys get that rush of, you know, we did this, and it builds character. You go through your grading, you get your shodan, it's like, wow, I've done this, this is great.
Yeah, it's a very broad statement, and it's like what Rick and Darren both said, it depends what you're involved in. I mean, but building character, to me, it's you're making someone emotionally stronger, you're making them more independent, they're being a better person, they're better at dealing with problems. I mean, 100%, that's a bit undeniable. So I think
it definitely does. I've got a question for everybody, because I think that statement is nonsense. So I've got a question for everybody. If karate builds character, why are there so many assholes in karate?
there's assholes everywhere.
Because they're tolerated. They're tolerated.
No accountability.
Because there's no accountability.
Okay, so there's no accountability in the environment that you say builds character. If there's no accountability, then it can't build character because there's so many assholes in it.
In the right sense, in the right circumstances with good practitioners, it does. In the wrong hands, like anything that's in the wrong hands.
Oh, no, no. I've seen some extremely good practitioners who are complete assholes. Just because you're good doesn't mean that you're strong in character.
Okay, I'll accept that point. They deserve to be whooped.
But it helped your character some.
Oh, it helped them be better assholes?
Well, maybe that's what all it was.
It's funny.
But
Mitch,
then again, if you think of it in another, just to take a total jump to the side, somebody listening to this podcast could be saying, well, there's five assholes right there.
I'd say very often to who they.
And I'd go further than that and say more often than not.
It's all in the eyes. As far as being an asshole, it's all in the eyes of the beholder.
Exactly, exactly. But look, there are people we've all experienced in the martial arts who have perspectives that we would define as, and of course this is subjective, but who are obviously very arrogant people and who are obviously very self-important. And
there's
an argument
to be made that this martial art attracts them.
I would say this martial arts builds them. I think karate does as much to create assholes as it does to create strong characters.
You give them a black belt, they start putting red tips on it and continuous red stripes.
You've got an asshole with character, though.
Yeah, you've got an asshole with the character of being an asshole. I don't understand. I'm getting confused here.
Maybe we could put a caveat on that and say karate builds character until ego takes over.
Then karate, if your ego takes over, then karate's not building character. The whole point of building character, look, I happen to believe that karate, when well taught and well practiced, is a humbling experience, not an ego-inflating experience. I think that the best practitioners, and I will not even go out on a limb, I will say happily that the people I have met who I revere, and there are people I do revere, who are the best practitioners, are the people with the most, not necessarily self-deprecating, but certainly humble perspectives on themselves.
That's character.
It is character, but I know more people who are assholes, who stand up and say, I know everything. I am the one to be bowed to. I am the master. I am this. I am that. That's not character. So I think my point on this is karate can build character. It doesn't inherently do it. It depends how it's taught. It depends how it's practiced. And it depends how it's perceived.
I was just thinking, as soon as you're dealing with the general public, obviously you're going to inherently get more wrong people than right people. I won't use the term asshole. But I think if you have a good club, karate in general won't weed out the assholes. But if you have a good club, you can train in a sort of an arena that does build character. And when an asshole comes in, he's quickly... He either conforms and learns and becomes a good character person, or he's kicked out of the club. So at least in that environment, you're building character and the others around you are building their character and you can all learn and grow.
Fair enough.
Whether that helps you in the real world and all that, and obviously you're going to go to a tournament and you're going to meet assholes, but that's going to be in every aspect of life.
Okay, but at least
in that group that you're in, you're all under the same wavelength.
But, Darren, you made a good point where you said if someone's in a good club and they turn into an asshole, they get kicked out or they leave and they go to a different club. They go to a different club and they're an asshole at that other club. The point being...
No, I understand, but at least it's not your club.
Darren,
Do you know of any assholes that have been kicked out of a club?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, totally.
I've done it. Yeah.
And I've seen it at Jushin too.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Anyway, let's go around the table once about karate building character. Len, final thoughts.
Karate, I think what you nailed it there, Mitch, in a better way to word that was karate can build character, not necessarily does build character.
Fair enough, Darren.
I agree that it has the potential to build character. It's going to depend on who's building the character and who's on the receiving end.
I agree with the two guys that it can build character. It doesn't necessarily build character. It's not the only thing that builds character, but I also think it's a phrase that was coined for advertising.
Yeah, that doesn't make it less true or less untrue because of that.
But it does build it, sometimes in a good fashion, maybe in a bad fashion too. But
yep.
I'm worried. I caution against those who cling to it. I take karate, therefore I have character. And that's a lot of people. So I just got to be careful about that, that's all.
I agree with Bob. I think that's a dangerous extension of that phrase. People put that on their marketing, and they go, oh, I'm a black belt, I studied karate, therefore I have character, and I have positive character, therefore anything I say or think or do is a good thing.
So I took karate, and I am a character. I'm not saying what kind of character.
Nobody's just denying that, Rick.
Okay, guys, we're well over the hour mark. Let's take a break, take a pee, have a drink, whatever, and nice. Giddy up. All right.
Giddy up, go.
Oh, if you're good at kata, you'll be good at sparks.
Hey, why don't we all wind Darren up and say, yeah, you will be. Go on, Mitch. Do it.
Let's do that.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do that. That'd be hilarious. Okay. Now, Rick, don't be laughing and fuck
it up. You gotta not laugh.
Exactly.
I'll try. I'll undo my mic.
Don't fuck with it.
There he is.
Hey, he's back.
There he is.
He is back.
Okay, folks, we're back after the break. The next one, this is a good one. I'm looking forward to getting into this one. The statement that we're going to be talking about is, if you're good at kata, you will be good at sparring. Does anybody want to take the first stab at that?
I will.
Okay, Bob, go ahead.
No, if you're good at kata, if you're grounded, if you practice enough so that your punches are powerful and fast, if you're concentrating in the right way during kata, you can't help but be good at sparring.
No.
Hang on, wait a sec. Len, because you had said something over the break. What do you think about that?
I've jumped back and forth on this one, but, you know, like a few weeks ago I was saying, no, Kat, it was nonsense, but having done a bit in preparation for guys for Shodan, I can see marked improvements in their sparring because of the focus they're putting on footwork and movement and execution of punches. So
no,
I think it's definitely a fantastic tool for sparring.
No.
I got it. You know what? I'm going to leverage off what both Len and Bob said. And I'm looking back over my own experience here because I've been competing both in kata and in sparring for a number of years. And I have to admit that my initial perspective is, no, there's no connection. That's ridiculous. But when I take a second, take a breath, step back, and look at the connective tissue between kata and sparring, I have to agree with Bob and Len. I don't know how you cannot see that connective tissue. Like Bob was saying, you're grounded in your stances. You learn how to punch properly. You learn how to extend, and through visualization, you learn timing. I honestly don't see how you can't think that kata makes you a better fighter.
Do you want me to jump in or?
No, but yeah, the thing is, with kata and sparring, generally you go to tournaments, the guys that do well in kata do well in sparring. So it must
and
be helping
that's
them
absolutely,
somehow.
No.
Exactly.
No. Jesus. Okay. We'll take what Richie just said. If you take what... I know there's going to be exceptions to every rule, but the guys that do well in kata and do well in sparring, they're just really good at karate. And it doesn't matter whether they're doing sparring or kata, they're just really good. And that's how that works out. I don't think it's one is accentuating or helping out the other. I just think they're naturally good, so therefore they compete in both and that's it.
Okay, wait a second, Darren. So what, you're saying that the components of what goes into making a good kata, grounded stances and focus technique and speed and all of that stuff, has nothing to do with sparring.
I'm not saying it has nothing to do with it. I think if you took, for example, if you took two clubs side by side and one just concentrated on sparring and one did kata and sparring, the club that just does sparring is going to be better in competition than the club
that does sparring. I can't agree with that at all. Anybody else want to weigh in here? Yeah, Bob.
Well, if that was the case, every UFC fucking practitioner would be doing some form of kata in order to enable him to be better a fighter. And it just does not happen.
I think that if they did do kata, they would be better fighters. Bob, what were you going to say?
I'm going to say that I can't do this anymore.
I can't either. I can barely.
Really, can I?
I can fucking barely keep myself from puking. Oh, God damn it.
You cunt.
God
now,
damn it.
I was making dance bars.
I feel like such a fucking idiot. You know what? I was trying to diplomatically figure out how I could do this without denouncing Connor or anything. You fucking cunts.
That, fuck. That'll teach you for going out for a 10-minute smoke.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
That's okay. By the way, I'm totally leaving that in the podcast. Okay, let's
Mitch. Mitch, that was a masterclass.
Oh my God, that is the best fucking thing I've ever heard. That was great. Jesus.
Okay, fucking hell.
That fucking somebody jumping in. I agree with Bob there. He's fucking moving. And I'm like, wait a second, that doesn't sound like you. What the fuck? Am I wrong here? I was waiting to be fucking convinced that I was wrong. Yeah. Fuck. And I was willing to entertain the idea.
I feel very good about that. That was funny.
Fuck.
Okay. Let's wind this back. Genius. You are. Fuck it, Al. I don't think Lenny likes Darren very much.
I love him. I love
him. Oh, that's fucking hilarious. Okay,
he's the
guys,
only fucker that gets me.
Okay, let's take this back and we'll start the conversation again, but let's be fucking serious here. So, but look, seriously though, there are some people who take this line. Yeah. If you're good at kata, you will be good at sparring. Let's go around the table. No, is there anyone who says yes?
No.
I'll start. Kata has some secret techniques that are hidden inside.
Okay.
It may come from, like Darren when I was saying, if someone's in a tournament, they're good at kata. Quite often, they're good at sparring. But it's not because they've done kata that they're good at sparring.
Exactly.
It's how much they work out at sparring and how much they work out at kata.
Okay, but here's...
When it comes to the question of if you're good at kata, you will be good at sparring. We can form a chorus of no's that rivals Queen's Somebody to Love or what's the...
What Bohemian Rhapsody.
We can harmonize no to Bohemian Rhapsody.
I mean, realistically, I didn't even get into it, but I remember in tournaments, there were guys that won first place in kata all the time, and they were shitty fighters. And most of the people that got into fighting were shitty at kata.
It depends on what you spend your time practicing.
It doesn't. Like, some people are just good at one thing and not good at the other, but because you're in karate, you have to do both, and that's just the way it is. So
look at George St. Pierre. I don't think any of us would argue that he is a world-class fighter.
Have you watched him do kata?
Yes, there's a video on YouTube. There's a video of him on YouTube doing kata. It is the saddest. It's awful.
I felt bad for him.
I did too. I'm like, oh man, don't do that, George. No. George, what are you thinking? Okay, anyway, let's pass that one by. I think we're all on the same page there that... I want to make this clear to anybody listening, if anybody's listening. We are not, at least I'm not, denigrating kata. I love kata. I compete at in it. I'll compete in kata before I'll compete in sparring. I love
at our
practicing.
Age, that's all we got left.
Exactly. I love kata. I've always loved kata. I just, and I think we all, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I think we all agree that some of the high-level rhetoric that comes through, because there are a lot of people, including our head instructor and some of that ilk, who champion the cause that, look, if you want to be a good fighter, be good at kata. That connectivity just doesn't exist. It's just, and Darren made a brilliant point that if kata made you a better fighter, when we were fucking him over there a few minutes ago, if kata made you a better fighter, UFC guys would incorporate kata into their training camps, and nobody does. Why? Because it's nonsense. That doesn't mean that kata doesn't have value. It absolutely does. Okay, let's go on to the next one. Actually, I want to jump a couple. I want to go to the second last talking point, and that doesn't mean we won't cover the others, but this one is near and dear to my heart. Strength does not matter when training in the martial arts in general and karate specifically. Any thoughts?
It's relative, I think is the best way to put it. It's not that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter as an individual practicing an art. It will matter if you're up against somebody that's practicing the same art and they weigh twice as much as you. Is your goal to defeat that person? Well, you're not going to, because they're at the same level of you and they weigh twice as much. Does that diminish your training or your goals or objectives? No. But if you want to compete with that person, obviously it's going to matter. But as an art, it doesn't matter. If in a fight or competition, obviously it matters.
Darren kind of said everything.
Yeah, he kind of epitomized everything there.
Actually, I'm going to jump in then. I'm going to say that I think the stand-up arts, karate, taekwondo, even I'm not going to say boxing, and I'm going to restrict my comments to non-contact competition.
There's a big goalposts.
Smaller, faster, better points.
In point fighting, strength doesn't matter, because it doesn't matter how much stronger you are than your opponent or they are than you, because it's not about strength. It's about speed and it's about connecting your points. However, as soon as you get into contact sports or any of the groundwork type environments, judo, don't even talk to me. If you have two guys in judo who are equally skilled and one is stronger than the other, the stronger guy will win every time. On the ground and on his feet. So I think it's more about the art that you the endeavor that you practice, and whether in the stand-up arts, whether it's contact or not.
And I think that sort of thing, two things. First, to touch on what you said, there is a certain amount of thing, like you take the UFC and you get guys that move up a weight or down a weight. But especially the guys that move up a weight and they're fighting larger guys, their philosophy is, I'm going to be quicker. So that, but they're only moving up one weight class. Obviously, if you're moving up a couple, that's out the window, because you're going to get sledgehammered and that's the end of it. And the other thing is, I think when you're talking about that whole size, you're basically talking about back in the day where not as many people trained. And if you're a kid and you're in a town and you start training in a martial art and nobody else in the school is, then yeah, you'll have an advantage over bigger people because they're not training. So there is something to say that the lesser weight person is still able to overcome a larger opponent, but you're assuming the larger opponent is not as skilled as you or not training at all. And, exactly. And that's where that all stemmed from. And it's great if you're growing up, you might be the only one in your school that actually trains in martial arts. Therefore, you're going to have an advantage regardless of your size if you're training properly and on all that other thing. But
Darren's exactly right. Remember in the 60s and 70s, the whole marketing thing for judo was, and aikido, is that you're using your opponent's size against them. And ultimately, it's bullshit, but Darren's right. If they're not trained, then yes, it's exactly right.
I read an interesting statistic the other day. It was actually a YouTube video about street self-defense. And it was in San Diego, and I think it was San Diego. And the guy was saying, look, this whole notion about being able to take someone bigger and stronger than you if you take a martial art, that was, and this harkens back to what Darren said, back in the day, that's when other people weren't taking the martial arts. You get into a street fight now in one of the larger metropolises around North America, you've got a 40 to 60% chance of fighting somebody who's got some training. So that whole, ooh, take our martial art and you'll be able to defend yourself against bigger and stronger attackers, I don't think that has very much validity anymore.
No.
The only way that strength does matter in martial arts is you do have to have some strength to do the techniques, even if you're not going up against anyone. I mean, you've got to have muscle mass to do some of it. But, I mean, as far as you were saying, like, to win fights, I mean, no. If you're fighting someone who has absolutely no training, sure, you can do it. Or if you're doing point sparring, you can get away with just the speed and the accuracy. But, I mean, if it was came down to the, like, contact sparring, no. You have to have the size and you have to have strength.
And on the same note, like, if you're training in any kind of martial art, whatever it is, depending on what your objective are, if it's a self-defense objective and stuff like that, chances are, if you're on the street and someone's trying to rob you or whatever the situation presents itself, those people that you're up against aren't practitioners, because otherwise, nine times out of ten, that's not the people that are training, that are people that are going out robbing people and doing all that.
Nope.
It's a different thing. So there's obviously a definite advantage to training, and maybe you'll be the little guy being approached by a bigger person. But if they haven't trained and you have, then that's your advantage. And that's just if that's why you're training, for self-defense reasons, which a lot of people kind of get into that because of that. So it's not to say that, look, if you're small, don't train because you'll never be able to beat anybody. That's ridiculous, obviously. But even if you're training to be as a self-defense reason, that's still a good reason to get into it, because chances are you're not going to be attacked by someone that has training, because actually nowadays that's different too. Back in the day when Mitch was talking about stuff, the people that are robbing you don't have any training because they don't do that. That's not their thing.
Let's keep in mind though that a lot of the altercations that happen aren't necessarily rapists out going out to rape people and people trying to rob people. Zing!
You better edit that bit out.
A lot of the altercations we're talking about are encounters in pubs or bars, and just, you know, not necessarily one person trying to be adversarial or overpowering relative to another. It's just an interaction that goes bad, road rage, that sort of thing. You know what I mean? Like, I'm curious what the stats are in terms of physical altercations relative to the cause. Is it someone defending themselves against a malicious attacker, or is it two people who are having an interaction and it just goes south? You know what I mean? So I agree with Darren. If someone's out to rob you, then maybe they don't have a lot of training. But if you're just out at a pub or a bar and some guy spills a drink on another guy and it just gets all out of hand, you never know who's going to know what. So, but this brings up a whole other question. How many, and I want to ask Lenny this first, because again, he's got an ongoing club with a ton of members. How many people actually come to you, Len, and say, I want to train with you because I want to learn to defend myself in an unsafe world?
Probably not even a tenth of them. Most of them just want to come in and try and work out, and learn a martial art, but never in the intention of, I need this to fucking survive on the street.
And that makes sense to me, because I've, over the years, and in the number of clubs I've been involved in and have had a hand in talking to new students coming in, I can't remember one student who has said, I want to learn how to fight. I want to learn to defend myself because I feel unsafe. I've had a number of parents who have said, I want my kids to take this because I want them to be safe.
That was on the Flintstones episode too. Nice.
But I've seen where kids are being picked on at school and they just want to be able to defend themselves kind of thing. Yeah. But I'd say they wouldn't walk in. They would have had to tell their parents about it and their parents brought them in. But
So let's leverage off that and go to the one before that, which is karate's for self-defense only. And just to expand on that, it was explained to me that all of the kata in karate starts with a block. And looking back through all the kata, that's debatable. But I can see why they said that, because if you look at karate from a self-defense perspective as opposed to an offensive perspective, it would make sense that you would be starting with a block. But anyway, what are your thoughts on the notion that karate is designed and should be used only for self-defense? Defense. That's a weird question. I realize now how weird it is. Anybody?
That sounds like it stems from the old early 70s thing that you only use it when you have to, and your hands are licensed with the police, and back in the day, that sort of stuff going on. You only use it for self-defense. You never use it to actually aggress against people. Whatever.
It'd be nice that nothing was used to start an altercation, whether it's karate or boxing or anything. It'd be nice to know that nobody's using anything to start something. Therefore, everything's going to be self-defense.
Yeah, I kind of put this one in the same category as a lot of the nonsense that we were fed back in the 70s, 80s, even the 90s. There was a lot of rhetoric being fed through the martial arts, both for a marketing perspective, and maybe some of the guys who were repeating this rhetoric actually believed it, but I wonder how much thought they actually gave to this stuff. It's for self-defense only. Okay, yeah, I'm not going to go out and go up to a guy at a bar and just start slamming his head into a wall for no reason. If I get into an altercation, I would like to think I would be on the side of the angels in that altercation, and yeah, I'll fight if I have to. It seems like a silly statement to me.
These days, karate's for competing, because that's half the fun for many people.
Len, what do you think?
I'm totally with you on that one. We've kind of covered it. It's an old myth. I mean, let's face it, Netflix and Disney have made a career over it. You've got your Cobra Kai, Strike Force, Strike Hard, No Mercy versus Miyagi-Do. It's only self-defense. So it's been Disney-fied even at this stage.
Disney-fied.
I mean, it's the same. Like, violence.
I want to be Disney-fied.
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 Karate is for self-defense. In other words, don't go out and fucking beat someone up. He threw a punch. Oh, was it a karate punch? Or was it just a punch? Was it regular punch? Was it taekwondo punch? Which was it?
Judo chop chop.
Don't go around attacking people. Full stop.
Don't go around attacking people. We should get that on like a banner and put it up on the dojo wall.
Note to self. Don't go around attacking people.
Rick, what do you think?
Karate is for self-defense only. Well,
my thesis.
My thesis? Did you say my thesis?
As you said, back in the day, I think that was another one of those advertising things where they wanted people to try and understand that you're not supposed to take this karate, go to school, and start beating up people. So they said it's for self-defense. So, and even we even preach that to the kids. I mean, you don't start stuff, but hey, if something starts, then you want to finish it.
You finish it, my friend.
There's a notion here too that I think a lot of the training now that I see in the various clubs I'm associated with, and granted, it's a very loose association with Lenny's club because I'm not there, obviously. But the notion of training to be able to defend yourself on the street, I don't see a lot of that anymore. I see a lot of some of the other stuff we've talked about. You want to build character. You want to be good at this. You want to compete, blah, blah, blah. You just enjoy it. I mean, one of the questions we ask students at gradings is, why do you take karate? And the litany of reasons you get are hilarious. And the one that I always look for is, it's fun. I like it. that's a perfectly valid reason to do it. So taking karate and applying it to any kind of practical streetwise self-defense seems to be a notion that is gaining less and less traction over the years. Lenny, what do you think? You're running a full-time club.
A lot of people come to me with younger kids looking for self-defense, but the older people know it's just to train with, and it is losing the traction. But I think, you know, the whole thing of karate, perception of it is changing. It has a lot to do with external influences of people are watching UFC, people are watching other martial arts, and it's been pushed a little bit aside in terms of what's more practical. You look at something online now and somebody demonstrates something, and the first thing you get, the Facebook police will jump on it. Well, that doesn't work in a UFC octagon, or that doesn't work on the street. So everyone's looking for practical scenarios with it to criticize it.
Hey, Lenny, how many of your children's students have been bullied, would you say?
Oh, without being actually told, you know, some parents will tell you, but I'd say, you might say a quarter, maybe.
Like, that's why I started. I was just wondering
the biggest reason they come is for confidence, yeah, absolutely. That would be the biggest sell point.
You know,
parents come to you and say, they didn't take the soccer, they didn't take the Gaelic sports, they didn't take the whatever. A couple of years later, they go, it's been great for his confidence. And the amount of people that come to me say, well, such and such a parent recommended you because their child has had great confidence since they started. So,
I was just thinking of something where you're talking about karate is for self-defense only. The fact that any club would go into sparring competitions almost fucking contradicts that term. Because you're no longer self-defense, because you're actually trying to be first to score a point on your opponent, which completely negates the entire self-defense aspect of it.
Granted, but let's make the delineation between...
No, but you said karate is self-defense only.
I get it.
As soon as I'm entering the tournament, it's not self-defense. I'm actually trying to beat my opponent to the punch.
Look, that particular statement, and maybe we should separate it out between streetwise self-defense and tournaments, because you're right. If you go into a tournament, you're not going in there to defend yourself. You go in to win. You want to be the first to score the point. But I think there's a delineation to be made between street self-defense and tournament fighting. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's...
I think if you're running a club and it's purely on self-defense, there's all kinds of grappling and clinch work and self-defense shit that you can do. But as soon as you go into point sparring, that's not self-defense.
Agreed. So yeah, absolutely. It's not.
I was just going to say that kills that term. Karate is no... Yeah. It's not for self-defense only by the very concept of competition.
I think that statement was bandied about more in a street perspective than it was in a tournament perspective. But you're right. I'm not arguing the point. So, Darren, let's go back. Let's get off these talking points and go to the one that you had sent me.
Maybe it's just me. I don't know. But I find it could be karate, definitely, many martial arts in general. But what really drilled the point home for me is I got into knife fighting in a little bit at one time. And the more I learned about that, the more I was scared to go out in public and get into that altercation. And I'm just wondering, like, when you start to really learn karate or any martial art, I didn't get confidence the better I got. The more I could do, the more I realized that my opponent could do. And that scared me to go out and get in a fight, because I know what's coming at me. So I found the better I got, the less confidence I got. And I didn't know whether, is that the same for everybody, or is that just a weird psychological thing that I got? But I just find the more that I know, the more that I'm aware that the world knows, and the more I'm aware of the injuries that can be inflicted upon me.
That's a great myth, a martial art myth, is that you can effectively defend yourself against a knife attack. Anything. You know, it's so prevalent that they assume that the attacker is an idiot. And that reminds me of a Jim Carrey skit where he's telling the guy he's attacking him wrong with a knife. He's supposed to raise his arm straight above his head and come stabbing down. If you know, like, I've never taken any knife classes like Darren has, but Like, come on, you hold your knife in a reverse punch position. You fend things off with your forward hand, and you'll kill the person. I'm getting upset.
Yeah, but please. I'm the same. I agree with Darren. Is the fact I did take a couple of knife seminars, and what it does is it lets you know. And he goes over it. He says, if you slice up the carotid artery in the leg, you got 15 minutes to make to the hospital. If you slice underneath the arm and catch the artery in there, you got less than 15 minutes. If you take a knife across the belly, straight across the belly, you got less than 10 minutes to make it to ER, and they can maybe save you. Once you know this, it's like, I don't want to get in a fight with anybody with a knife because I know what he could possibly do. But you've got enough knowledge now that you say, you can do say with confidence that, all right, you just back off and wait till you get to a position where you can pick up a stick and hammer him with it. You don't try and take on the knife.
No, I just get the fuck out of there.
Exactly.
No. Like, I'm scared to fuck.
If you can, running is a good option.
The thing is, look.
Hey, Darren, have you ever done the thing where two people have magic markers in their hand and they pretend they're knives and they mark up their... Yeah.
Loads of times. And hence my thing. I just want to get the fuck out of there.
Yep.
I just want to speak to what Darren had talked about. I'm in the same boat as Darren in that the more I learned, the less confident I felt, but it was for a completely different reason. I never lived a life where getting into fights was a thing. How my martial arts, for about 20 minutes, and I think one time I had to push a guy out a door. So there was no real connectivity between my training and a practical self-defense perspective on the streets. The reason I felt so inadequate and so afraid as I went up through the ranks, it was all relative to the notion of progressing through my training. As I learned more, and it's kind of the same thing, just not practically based. As I learned more, I realized how much more there was to learn. And that's what intimidated me. When I was a brown belt, I came extremely close to quitting because I was so intimidated by the notion of how much there was to learn and how little I knew. So as I increased my knowledge as I trained, the understanding of how much was out there that I didn't know weighed extremely heavily on me. So it's the same kind of thing. We both felt intimidated by what was out there. Darren's was more practically based. Mine was just more based on the general knowledge of the martial arts. I can't tell you how close I came to quitting when I was a brown belt. Exactly because of that. Because I finally realized, or I was starting to realize, how much there was to learn and how little I knew in the scope of what there was.
But it's not so much, like you both said, lack of confidence. I wouldn't agree with that. I think it's more you end up with a very healthy respect of what could happen. Like Darren, you understand what could happen if you get in a knife fight, and Mitch, you understand what could happen if you get in a fight. Because when I was listening to that, it was like I'm relating that to like dogs. I trained a couple of dogs and I've been around dogs all my life. I'm not scared of dogs per se, but I have a very healthy respect for a dog that I don't know. And it's the same thing. If you get in a fight, some guy pulls a knife and there's an alley behind me that I can get out, boom, I'm gone.
But Len, what do you think?
I wouldn't say it's a lack of confidence. I'd say it's more of a healthy respect.
I'm telling you, it's a lack of confidence. My part, anyway.
For my part, too. Yeah, for my part, too.
Yeah.
Like, when I say lack of confidence, I mean an actual fear. Like, if I've been in situations, I'll deal with it, but I fucking don't want to, and I'm scared of it. Okay. But it's not like you just think, like you think if you spend your whole life training self-defense and stuff like that, you'd think you'd be able to walk around with a certain amount of confidence that you can deal with situations and still have the respect. I don't have that. I don't have the confidence and the respect. I have a legitimate fear.
Yeah, I think for me, it's a bit from kind of every basket. Number one defense, don't be there when shit goes down. So I'm getting the hell out of there. Basically, that's your best defense. I wasn't there in the punch arrived. Mission accomplished. I have a healthy respect because you got that much awareness. But for me, it's kind of, and luckily it's only happened maybe two or three times in my life where it's kind of something has happened. And I'm already thinking ahead when you know this is going to go down.
pardon my French, you're getting fucking destroyed, mate, and I'm out here then, you know, as quick as I can. And but because, and there's only one reason, and that's not meant to sound conceited, because if I think of it any other way, I'm gone, I'm done for. I've already lost the psychological battle. I'm gonna freeze, I'm gonna just shit myself, whatever. And probably harkens a bit to the fear that Darren had. I mean, proverbially shit myself.
I just shit myself normally. Not even fear.
Yeah, and not slagging off.
That's a good way to put off an attacker, by the way.
Yeah, that'd be good, actually.
That guy's crazy.
But yeah, if I didn't think of it any other way, I would end up with an actual totally inherent fear. That being said, I still would avoid going to certain social circumstances in certain places now, because you just know, like Dublin City Centre now, kind of, nah, certain areas, not going there. It's just not worth the risk.
In saying that, I live in those areas and I frequent them and I do all that, yeah. But I still have an inherent fear. But it's not a fear. It's just, it's like, you misinterpret this. Like,
it's a caution. No, it's a caution. Yes, it is. I know what you're saying.
I still do all the same stuff, and I'm aware of everything, and I'm aware of my abilities and everything. But it just seems like the more you understand about the art of fighting, the more you understand how fucked up you can get if somebody else is able to do that to you.
Exactly.
And that's almost debilitating in certain.
But I remember, Darren, when I met you.
That's a good awareness, though, Darren. That's a good thing to have, that awareness. Oh.
Yeah. When I met you at Force, Darren, we only knew each other a few months. And before we knew, each of us knew that we were involved in martial arts. Didn't someone, you took a few thumps in Dublin City one night, I remember.
Yeah.
That's going way back. What was the scenario there? Can you recall?
Yeah, I can recall it.
Do you want to share it?
No,
that's fair enough. That's fair. I was just curious. I mean,
on the side, I'll share it.
Yeah, no, actually, without actually going into it, like, when that went down that night, were you kind of, get me the hell out of here, or, okay, I know some shit here, I'm going to stand and fight? Like, what was going through your mind?
Unfortunately, it was that one.
Okay.
I can do it.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
And that was my downfall.
Yeah. I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
Well, no, in that situation, I should have got out of there and I could have avoided the situation, but I was overconfident in the situation and that was my downfall.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, and this is probably pertinent to the situation. I'm not going to name names here because it's someone prominent enough in the martial arts world at the time. This is going back a good few years back.
Are you talking about George Dillman?
No.
Lenny's on the podcast.
I didn't mention him. I didn't mention him. No, it was a guy who's very prominent in certain martial arts circles now globally. He basically saw someone getting jumped one night, and it was when jiu-jitsu was only starting out here, and he went to intervene and he took the assailant to the ground and had him pretty much submitted, but didn't realize the guy had five mates, and the five mates danced on him while he was on the ground. He was left with a broken jaw, broken ribs, broken arm, and he got busted up.
Let's bring this one to a close, guys. We're well over 2 hours.
Fuck, I just looked at it and I'm like, no, it's not a close. I'd go for another hour.
Well, there's one point that we didn't touch on. I think, you know, that's the answer's going to be, can I just bring it up?
Yeah,
It's the only one point that we skipped, and it was karate masters have the best technique.
Okay. Sure, let's talk about that for a couple of minutes.
It should take about 30 seconds, I'd say.
Yeah, I think we already did. By the time you're a master, you're old and decrepit.
No, hang on. No. We're talking about by masters. Let me frame the topic.
Are we talking masters by grade?
We're talking about the originators of styles and the guys. Yeah, we're talking about the guys that we bow to when we start a class. I read, and this is all I'm going to say on this subject, and you guys can take it from here. In researching this, I found an article, and this guy was talking about Funakoshi. And what he said was, if you took Funakoshi, even in his prime, and put him in a tournament today and named him Dave Smith and had him go up and compete, he would get slaughtered, both in sparring and
here, if you took anybody even 5 years ago and put them up in today, that's just the evolution of the arts. So I wouldn't present that as a negative thing.
No, I'm not saying it's a negative thing. What I'm saying is if someone says, hey, this guy is an icon to be revered because of his accomplishments in the martial arts, and you go back and look at videos of that individual, I don't think that by today's standards, that individual would necessarily hold up.
I know, and that sucks. But that sucks. But that's the same thing if you go to the Hockey Hall of Fame and you see the guys that are in the Hall of Fame and you go back and watch what they're doing, you'd laugh at it and go, that's not very hard. Your competition was shit, blah, blah, blah. It's relative to where you are, the generation, the era, and all that sort of stuff.
It's a good thing that things get better. I don't understand.
Yeah, of course it is. Absolutely is. But there are people who still hold up the quote-unquote masters as the icons of what you should be shooting for in terms of your training. Okay, but that's my point.
Whoever's teaching these people or whatever, it's like you can respect your forefathers regardless in any sport you're in. Every sport has evolved, and the people that were there like 50 years ago wouldn't be able to do what they're doing now. That's just the evolution of it. But you still respect what they did for the sport.
And I'll go one step further. You shouldn't only respect what they did. You should almost revere what they did.
Well, that's what I meant by respect, I think.
Yeah, I
didn't know their word.
Anyway, my point is that the people who started the styles and the people who trained before us and the people who passed this shit on to us deserve the reverence of the people who train now. And I think it's like a hall of fame.
It's like a hall of fame.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And I think it's a bit of a crime when those people are not given their due. I agree
100%.
I do not agree with deifying these people. I don't think we should go, oh my God, this individual like Chitose or Funakoshi or Miyagi, all these people who started these styles or Soroka, who were instrumental in the development and the passing on of this. I don't believe they should be deified. I believe they should be respected, and I'll take one step further and say revered, because without them, we would not be doing what we're doing, and what we do now would not be elevated to where it is. Not by me. I don't elevate anything, but there are people who practice these styles and these martial arts who do elevate it. And I think we all owe a debt of gratitude to those people that should never be forgotten. Yeah. Okay, guys, let's go once around the table. It's been a bit of a mishmash of conversation this time. I've got a hobby for the next 2 weeks editing this mess. But let's go around the table once. Any last comments, anything anyone wants to say? Rick, what do you think? Anything you want to talk about that we haven't talked about already?
A lot of the statements that you've got on there were put on in, like we've said before, back in the day, back in the 70s, and when they were advertising to try and get students. Some of them are philosophical in nature. Some of them are just basically good advice that they seem to incorporate, which is not a bad thing. Some was for advertising. But, I mean, a lot of those things that you've got there are things that aren't bad to try to sort of live to. But, I mean, it's not a doctrine. And if you want to break it down, I mean, yeah, they fall apart when you start breaking it down. But
Darren.
Fuck, I didn't want to be next. No, because there was so much tonight. And I'm still on the fence on certain things, so I don't know how to wrap something up. But if I had to, I'd just like to take that last point you were talking about on revering things. And I think that's really important because even, again, resorting back to the UFC, there's one thing that they always say, and it's like, you're only as good as your last fight. And that's a shame because regardless of everything you've done up to that point, and as we were talking about earlier about trying to master something, eventually your body can't master it. So you're kind of on the decline. So if your last fight happens to be the start of your decline, people forget about you after that, and they'll automatically move on. And that's just human nature, and that's what it always been since the dawn of time. And I think it's kind of cool in karate that we go back to the masters and back to Chitose and back to Funakoshi and whoever else was your inspiration
dependent on the art before that and whoever led you up to that point. And regardless of how antiquated that might be relative to today's society, I think it's really important to go back and revere that, as Mitch said, and use that as an inspiration or just a grounding point to just go, look, fuck, I didn't invent it. And these people that are top notch right now, that are state of the art UFC champions, they didn't invent it. And their star is going to fade and somebody else is going to move on from that. So it's always a transition. It's always an evolution. But you have to remember where it came from. That's the bottom line. You have to remember. And that has to be your grounding. As in Bob was talking about earlier in Kata, and whether that was good or bad, there's a grounding there.
We just got through so much tonight, and we've had so many different opinions. It leaves your head kind of, fuck, what do we talk about as well? Like, you know, but... I have to go on a special limb and say a huge well done to Darren for taking the little roasting so well earlier on.
Because I I can't believe I was so naive.
It was a spur of the moment. Let's do this while you were having a smoking.
It was brilliant.
You know, but, you know, as always,
I wish this was a video podcast so we could see Darren's face as we were saying what we were saying.
Yeah, I mean...
Anyway, Len, carry on.
I couldn't say much to that because I was just on the verge of bursting out laughing the entire time.
No, it's just like we can disagree, we can laugh about things, but it just, as always, it leaves us going away with plenty of food for thought. Even Darren said a few minutes ago, no, don't, we're 2 hours into this. I don't know what, you know, people listen to this in the final edit, think I'm whatever X amount of minutes into it, and realize we're sitting here for over 2 hours. And we'd keep going endlessly, I think. So, and here we are, we're into season two after a year, and it, you know, it's every week just sparks more and more interesting talk points. So I've really enjoyed it. It's been a few weeks since we've done one, and I can't wait for the next one.
All this talk has reminded me of all this talk of mastery and styles and old masters and the way things trends these days. It just reminds me that the basis of what this stuff means to us ought to be only in our own heads, not relative to anybody else, not relative to the people who founded it, just how sincerely we try to practice, how sincerely we try to get better. And that's a humble thing to sincerely do. And I just hope that we, at least the people listening, can come away, think, at least cautioning themselves to try to do that, to be the best they can be, sincerely in their own heads, not what somebody else tells them at all. And yes, I'm not talking about children, I'm talking about adults. It's surprising how few adults can do that, but I urge all adults listening to try to keep it in mind, because in my own way I'm trying to.
You know, just to top off the conversation, I don't think it's a mystery that I despise the notion of elevation of martial arts above other endeavors. I think that we're supposed to be humble. I think that is best when we are. And I don't like myths or stereotypes that elevate the martial arts or the people who practice it.
Note to self, be humble.
Bob says that, you know, sarcastically and ironically, but I think that's a really important point to remember. So, anyway, folks, we're gonna call it quits for tonight. Thanks so much for listening again. My name is Mr. Maxine. This is the No Mind Podcast. Questions, comments to my No Mind Podcast Facebook page, my personal Facebook page, or send an email to nomindpodcast2021@gmail.com. Special kudos to Darren for being such a good sport, because that was fucking hilarious. And okay, nice. Folks, we're done and we're gone. Thanks so much, everybody. Bye-bye.